Hi, all. These are generally conversations between adults after the children have left the table. The language can be spicy and the subjects can get saucy. So if you're ready, you are listening to The Southern Fork, a podcast that hosts kitchen chats with some of the most interesting people in the culinary South. I'm your host, Stephanie Burt, and I'm always hungry to learn more. Let's dig in. Southern Fork is supported by Hybrid Audio Solutions. I know it's no surprise that I currently record this whole podcast myself. And take it from me, it's challenging. If you're interested in the pros handling your sound project, from radio commercial, album recording, or even television show, then Hybrid Audio Solutions is a great option. Scott and Alan, the partners behind the company, have been in the music business for more than 15 years, and they are sound and creative perfectionists, so much so that they have nurtured many musicians to major labels, as well as performed high-level sound editing for TV, including those shows on the Nat Geo channel. In addition to that, their studio in Charleston has spaces for both voiceover work as well as full band recording. Visit hybridaudiosolutions.com to learn more and imagine the sound of success for your next project. The work of Chef Frank Lee, in some ways, defined an era of restaurant culture in Charleston, South Carolina. Although Lee began his cooking career in Columbia, South Carolina in the 80s, it was his work at Slightly North of Broad that ignited a spark of culinary creativity. Meeting farmers at the back door, cooking seasonally, choosing sustainability over set menus. And then there was the shrimp and grits, the perfectly fried oysters, the bright tile fish or wahoo or whatever was coming off the boat. If you've eaten in Charleston, you probably know about Snob, a place where Lee was almost always in the kitchen, always talking to his staff, always aware that he was the maestro of this grand food play performed nightly. He retired last June and completed the Snob Cookbook, his first after 40 years behind the stove. And through it all, he mentored dozens of budding chefs who are now making news and running kitchens, not only in Charleston, but all across the country. Listen as he remembers all their names. Just listen.
Welcome to the Southern Fork, Frank Lee.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
I'm excited to be able to talk to you. I've looked at the cookbook. I've eaten your food over the years. We're sitting now in one of the restaurants that you really helped cement its place here in Charleston. We're in the upstairs dining room of the Old Village Post House, but it's still going to sound like a restaurant kind of in the background, like deliveries, little Old Village, but it's a great place to come, and it's a quiet place today. Even though it hasn't been quiet for you, you are now on a book tour, then you're going to be traveling to see your children. So you haven't had much time, downtime, right, after the kitchen?
No, there hasn't been, but because we went directly from there. You know, I stopped working at the in the kitchen in mid-July, and soon after that, we went to Terra Vida Food and Wine Festival, and the Epcot's Food and Wine Festival. And,
which is a good one.
Yeah, you know, it's
I mean,
huge.
They're both great. I love Terra Vida. Hey, Terra Vida. Hey, Colleen.
Yeah, thank you, Colleen. You did great. And there have been lots of charity events around town that we've participated in, and the tribute dinner with the Charleston Food and Wine.
And then the tribute lunch.
The Feed the Need. And I've been on the book tours to Charlotte and Columbia. And Columbia's looking better than ever before. I was real surprised.
It is. And I wrote a piece last year on Columbia. It's finally coming into its own a little bit. I've been going for 10 years waiting for something to happen. So
City Roots did a great job up there. Restaurant Bourbon hosted me and did a gig at Soda City, which it was 40 degrees and probably 1,000 people were on the street. It was amazing.
Emil's been on the podcast. Hey, Emil, how are you? Hey, City Roots, how's it going, Eric? So we're just going to shout out to people the whole time.
Right? Excellent.
But I think that's a good segue, really, into why you've been in the business for so long, besides the cooking and your love of it, is you're just really connected and you're really still excited and into people in the business. It still gets you excited to see people coming up in the business.
One of the things that we've always prided ourselves on in Charleston is our tight little chef community and how we support each other, although we're very competitive and very collaborative at the same time. And that attitude over the last 15 years, 18 years has spread as some of our alumni and others have spread to other cities like Atlanta and Charlotte and Asheville and Nashville and Greenville. It's really been seeded in Charleston, and it's spreading out like mycelium all over the country. And so we're seeing
your seed propagating, basically.
That's
you're seeding
right.
that next generation of really great chefs.
And they're exceeding my expectations, not only with their abilities and the results of their efforts, but with their camaraderie and the way they're approaching the business. They seem to be more open-minded and forward-thinking and willing to try new things with a really positive energy.
Well, the other night when we were at the tribute dinner, I told you, I said I was nervous about Snob. I was nervous what was going to happen to it because I loved it and it's been such an iconic restaurant. It was a place that I recommended a lot. And you said, no, Russ is going to do better than me.
Well, he has been. And another thing that's very interesting is how well the Halls group, especially Bill Hall Sr., has improved the facilities, and he's a smart guy. He's not going to kill the goose that laid the golden egg.
Right.
He's just going to make it better.
Right.
And he really has. I mean, if you look around the post house where we're sitting, certainly the facilities look better than ever before. And I got a lot of faith in Peter and Russ and Chris and Megan over at the slightly north abroad. They know which side is up.
Well, I've known about Snob since I was in high school and was coming here on vacation with my family. And then I got the chance, of course, to eat at your restaurant. I remember one of the first fancy dinners or lunches that I had when I was taken out at the Post and Courier when I worked there was Snob. And I had an oyster salad. You know, it was just one of those days, and you were in the kitchen, you came over and hugged whoever was with me, and I was like, it wasn't always like that. You basically started this whole thing by yourself. You just said, I mean, with a lot of other people.
Yeah, that's correct. I didn't start anything by myself.
But you said, I'm not going to buy from the big boys anymore. I'm going to buy from farmers. So,
well, you got to temper that. You know, I was one of the first to really search out local products because
right.
it's just the way I was raised in the kitchen. You know, and South Carolina coast is a very fertile area at different times of the year. And so we would put a lot of emphasis on buying local where others weren't putting emphasis at all. But that didn't mean that we didn't buy onions from Colorado or carrots from California or pineapple from Hawaii or lemons and limes from Mexico. But it did mean that we put a strong emphasis on sourcing local, finding and supporting our farmers and fishermen and beekeepers and cheesemakers and bread bakers, because I always wanted the food culture of the United States to reflect that of Europe, where you would go to your butcher, baker, candlestick maker, rather than shopping all at the giant grocery store. And growing up, that's the way it was too. We'd go to the butcher, we'd go to the baker. When I was coming up, grocery stores were kind of a novelty. They were, wow, you can get canned goods and frozen goods here. That's amazing.
Right.
You can get pineapples from Hawaii. Holy cow, that's amazing.
Right.
But you still had butchers and bakers and cheesemakers and local dairies and things like that. But that disappeared in the 70s and 80s.
Which were some of the producers that are still producing now that really fired you up to keep looking for more? Somebody, when you said, I tasted this, then you said, yes, I'm going to look for more.
Well, you just had to be open-minded because you had people like Crosby Seafood mm-hmm. or Low Country Lobster who are always been around in my lifetime, but they you could either buy fish from Europe or Alaska or the Caribbean, or you could ask them for local products. So sometimes you had just had to dig from the local companies like Limehouse Produce, mm-hmm. who was a big purveyor of local products. You just had to ask them, is this, I want local honey instead of honey from Arkansas or something. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't so much that you, you just had to look for it. But of course, people like Celeste Albers or Dan Kennedy, or they always had products that were right there at the tip of their fingertips, and that mm-hmm. was inspiring, very much so.
Mm-hmm. When you're taking these great ingredients, you're having to use local ingredients or wanting to use local ingredients, and then you are creating these seasonal menus. As snob became more and more popular, how did you as a chef begin to balance the popularity of certain dishes with the seasonality and then also the creativity that you really wanted as a chef, or maybe your sous chefs wanted to try a dish and then you're having to balance that with being one of the popular restaurants on East Bay Street?
Well, I always said that we rode the four horsemen. We rode a whitefish, crab, shrimp, and beef. Mm-hmm. And we had a variation of that on the menu almost at all times. And where we express our ephemeral, seasonal nature and the creativity and the spontaneity was in our special sheet. Mm-hmm. And so almost every day, and sometimes my partner David Marconi would complain about it. He'd say, look, you got a menu within a menu. And I said, yeah. That's right, because we got all these local fresh things that we want to run, but mm-hmm. you don't want to take off the beef tenderloin with the crab or the jumbo lump crab cake. So something's got to give.
Yeah. So we did both.
That was the answer. We had to listen to our customers and see what they wanted. And they wanted both also. I used to think that the shrimp and grits was a real tourist dish, or the crab stuffed flounder with mm-hmm. the fried shrimp was a real guest-oriented dish. And I looked up many times, there'd be people like Edmund Perlstein ordering the crab stuffed flounder. And I said, okay, I get it.
So sometimes you just want crab stuffed flounder.
That's right. Yeah. But you want to do it better than it's ever been done before.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, with all of that stuff happening with the menu within the menu, you had to run a really tight ship. And I did a project this fall for my writing side of things called Zagat 30 Under 30. And your name probably came up more than anybody in that new class of people under 30. People said, I learned from Frank Lee. I was in Frank's kitchen. I was in Chef. Well, they never called you Frank. I was in Chef Lee's kitchen. I was in Chef's kitchen. I'm like, what chef? And they're like, Chef Lee. And they said that they learned, you know, professionalism and the brigade system, but also just a quiet leadership. Can you talk a little bit about that, as well as how you knew somebody was going to work? Because you took these people that, you know, a lot of people today have a little hotshot action. Food Network has changed us, I think.
Well, I was lucky enough to start my own business when I was 17. And we had to pay for everything as we went. We didn't have a rich uncle. We weren't the pinky ring of a giant corporation. So we learned that every thing mattered, and we had to be very frugal and use things up. Mm-hmm. And then as we were going on my journeyman's tour, I worked in independently owned French kitchens. Again, that you lived and died by the profit you made.
Right.
And those guys and gals are really chintzy. I mean, you know, I worked at one kitchen where we saved the butter wraps
to
use it instead of plastic wrap. Or
right.
If you weren't using a gas, you shut it off. Or mm-hmm. you rang
you
out every...
Relight that pilot light all the time.
You maintained your equipment so the pilot light worked. But it was dependent on you to make a profit so you could mm-hmm. stay open. Mm-hmm. And so I was lucky in that respect to really come up with chefs who were independent and yet very creative and very respectful. So one, you wanted to use up all the soap that was in the soap container, but you also wanted to use the entire critter out of respect, or use the entire vegetable out of respect, and as well as just for a pinch and pennies.
Mm-hmm.
So it was that ability to operate a business and turn a profit, and the respect for the product itself, that I think gave me a leg up. And as a business owner, if you look and you say that napkin cost 11 cents, so, well, you know, you pick it up off the floor, or you recycle your glass and cardboard, because you could used to be able to take it to the recycler and make $5. I could go out to lunch and on cardboard I recycled.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, it's very
well, and I think
frugal.
We've forgotten that. I think even like just to give you an example, I'm around chefs cooking all the time, and I had to see something on the internet. No offense to the internet, as I write a lot on it, but I saw something the other day that I just started doing, which is taking all of my ends of carrots and my celery and my ends of my onions and putting them in a freezer bag to use them to, once I got a big one, to make vegetable stock. And I thought, well, duh, I've been seeing that in chefs' kitchens for 10 years. And why was I not bringing that into my house? I was just throwing my onions in the freezer. So those kinds of situations, I think, we're not used to in a convenience world.
You can certainly make compost out of them, too,
yeah.
if you have the
right.
place to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But another thing that really inspired me with the chefs I worked with and what I saw in France and the three-star restaurants was a deep sense of culture and understanding and intelligence. You know, you can't make it in this business if you're a dummy. You got to be able to read and write. You have to be curious. You have to build relationships. You have to be able to talk to your banker as well as the dishwasher.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very fortunate that my parents raised us to be avid readers,
mm-hmm.
and very I just fell into cooking by accident. I thought I'd be a doctor, lawyer, Indian chief. So I felt that commiserate on myself, as well as chefs who had brought me along, was to give people a sense of responsibility, not only for themselves, but for learning art and learning mm-hmm. music and appreciating the people they work with and having an open mind and being curious. So many times while we're working, especially during service, when it would get really thick, I would start talking about, you know, Picasso or Tolkien or E. Cummings or something to, or, you know, the Beatles or mm-hmm. anything to try to instill some curiosity for art and culture and the appreciation.
And they were like, what are you saying? What are you talking about right now?
every Saturday, we used to have the culture hour at SNOB,
wow.
which was actually 2 or 3 hours because that's when NPR mm-hmm. would play opera. So I would play opera at the screeching levels
just to
shake people up.
Yeah, and that was during prep?
That was during prep on Saturdays. That's the culture hour.
Mm-hmm.
Some people liked it, some people didn't, but it enriched them.
I'm not a huge fan of opera, but I could get about an hour of it. Would be hard.
I think La Traviata is playing in February downtown. You should go see it.
I should go. But did you think consciously about inspiring the chefs behind you? Did you think about
Absolutely.
That kind of action?
Absolutely, because I truly believe that that's the only thing that really goes forward. That's your real job
mm-hmm.
as a chef, as a human being, is to help others along. So
mm-hmm.
I always told my cooks and chefs that it doesn't matter. We could be digging a ditch, building a jet engine, or being cooks in a kitchen. Our real job is to become real human beings, become fully developed, become curious, to expand our brains, to expand our hearts, to be able to help each other and to be able to communicate. And communicating is really difficult. So teaching people how to communicate, whether it's being raising...
Especially when you're doing something, you know, with your hands. I mean, at this situation, I think about all those times when you're on the line and I would be in the weeds in 2 seconds. But if I were a trained chef, I wouldn't be as much. But then you're asking me to discuss Picasso. I would be like, what? I can't
Well, it's kind of like,
can't do that.
Well, it's kind of like, it's like playing music. It mm-hmm. stimulates both sides of your brain.
Right.
So if you're doing something very tactile, like playing the piano or the guitar, and you have to sing at the same time, that's like
it is like that.
It's
right.
the same thing. You're stimulating two sides of your brain. And it's there's nothing more rewarding for me, and I think for any chef, is to see the people who work with you go on and have healthy and productive lives and have positive energy and mm-hmm. raise families and become citizens.
Right.
And that's
right.
another thing we talk a lot about would be politics, you know,
really?
Racism and sexism and drugs and alcohol and really try to shed light on areas that people normally wouldn't want to talk about
mm-hmm.
or other things where I'd lose my temper. Who knew? Me lose my temper. Never. But from time to time, I'd lose my temper and I'd make the server cry or I'd make one of the cooks belittle them or something.
Mm-hmm.
But then so I'd sometimes be able to say, stop, wait a minute. Everybody gather around. I just gave you an example about how not to do things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I
mm-hmm.
lost my temper. I made the server cry. I ruined the energy we had going on. We'll never get it back. We're going to play catch up the rest of the evening. This is a good example of negative energy. This is what you want to avoid. So it's just little life lessons mm-hmm. like that that go on. And with leadership, you also have to show people that you can do every job in the kitchen
mm-hmm.
and that if I can do it, you can do it. And I always wanted to teach people how to own a business, not just work a station, but how to own the entire business.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think...
Because you get this vision when you can see the different pieces and parts working.
That's
and
right.
it feels really good to be a part of a machine like that.
Yes.
And that's what always attracted me as a restaurant, you know, is that quiet. They're not oftentimes, but when the machine is working really, really well, it's fun for every piece and part. I felt like the holidays would do that for when I would work.
It's like a benevolent dictatorship.
Yes.
You have, they're your guests, they're
right.
your servers, they're
right.
your cooks, and it's also your $8 piece of fish, and it's your electricity, and it's your water that's going down the drain.
And it's your mistake if you
that's
mess up.
That's right.
Right.
You're darn right. I learned how to apologize a lot.
Well, let's talk about communicating in a new form, the book, because you did this with a good friend. Bob Wagoner took all your photos. So how was that journey?
Well, Bob was the photographer, and he came on in the 11th hour, much to my delight. But it was also two other people, George Stevens, the designer, and Kristen Hackler, the editor over mm-hmm. at Advantage Media, both Charleston born and raised, and Advantage Media is a local company with Adam Witte. But the four of us got together, and Kristen and I bonded on the words, and she was able to find my voice and articulate mm-hmm. it very truthfully and succinctly. And George, who's responsible for how every page looks, bonded with Bob Wagoner on the images, and the four of us got together and decided what every single page would look like and what it would read like. And from the colors to the photos to the words to where the words were on the page. So it was a wonderful collaboration between myself and those three. And it very much reflected the style that I would use in the restaurant, where I would try to surround myself with very talented people,
mm-hmm.
task them with my vision, and then challenge them to improve upon it. You know, this is what I want to do, and you've bought into the game, and you have talent, so I want to hear your voice.
Mm-hmm.
I want your
mm-hmm.
voice on the menu. I want your voice in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And George and Bob and Kristen's put their voices in the book and improved my vision and improved my voice. So that was a real joy to see that dynamic work out and how everyone communicated. Now,
mm-hmm.
the four of us were quite adept at communicating already, but it was that same dynamic where you get people together
right.
With a shared vision. This
right.
is who we are. This is how we're going to operate within the context of my vision, and now you need to improve upon it.
Mm-hmm.
Not just status quo. You need to improve upon it.
Right. Right. Did it help you, the process, transition from being in that kitchen to not being in it anymore?
Not so much, because really for the last, Mr. Hall bought the restaurant almost 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I stayed with the company for a little over a year and a half, to help with the transition. And so I'd already been going through that transition for almost a full year,
mm-hmm,
before we started to really get down and dirty with the book. But if Mr. Hall hadn't had the faith and the belief and gave the support to make the book happen, it wouldn't have.
Well, do you think that once you get back from your grand tour of seeing all of your children, that you will? And that grand tour includes New Zealand, Hawaii,
San Francisco, 2 weeks in New Zealand.
Do you think you'll get back in the kitchen at all? Or do you feel like you'll start playing with, like, I know some chefs, they just like grill like crazy at home, or they get the big green egg and they go through the entire repertoire of how to cook with it.
I never say never, but I'm much more leaning towards doing something egalitarian or educational with Trident Tech, maybe with their apprenticeship program,
mm-hmm,
or maybe consult with some people on projects they want to do, or always threaten to just come and lodge myself at Fig and be Mike Lotta's prep cook. But it's at this point, I really don't have a burning desire to start a restaurant or build, mm-hmm, an empire. Mm-hmm. And
and that feels good. It feels relaxing, right?
It feels fine. I really don't miss the kitchen. You'll miss this, you'll miss that. Well, no, not really. Mm-hmm. I don't. You know, I've been reading a lot, and I've been getting a lot of exercise.
I'm sure if you wanted to go to Snob and play really obnoxiously loud opera music, they would allow you to.
I doubt that. it's Russ's kitchen now.
He was like, no more opera.
Probably not. No more opera.
Yeah.
But I would enjoy playing opera, that's for sure.
Well, I'm definitely honored to have enjoyed your food, and I love the fact that we got to chat about all this stuff today. So,
well, I want to give a big shout out to one of our first alumni to really make it big. Actually, there's several.
Mm-hmm.
And one is David Tetzloff out in Columbus, Ohio. Mm-hmm. Now there's Jason and Julia Schultz up in Greenville. You know, mm-hmm, they're a restaurant romance at Snob, and they now own going on two restaurant, have two children. They're doing fabulous. They're
And what's the name of the restaurant?
The Stella's in Simpsonville, right out of Greenville.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And there's so many others. I mean, we started out with actually more women in the kitchen than we had for quite a while. You know, when we started out, we had Nina Baffa was, mm-hmm, a sous chef. She's now up in the Philadelphia area. And soon after that, Libby Stritch, who's in St. Louis, I think. And we had Jackie Jackson, and who's almost retired, and Patty Hughes, who's over at the Francis Marion. And we've had a good run of women, but the superstar right now is Chelsea Conrad over at the Butcher and Bee.
Amazing. Just work.
Watch Chelsea. Out for Chels.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes on. Megan, yeah, Hutchinson right now at Snob is a force to be reckoned with. So it just goes on and on. I'm real pleased with the alumni.
Mm-hmm. Well, you should be. And I look forward to hearing more. That's going to take me an hour to tag everybody that you just called out on Instagram. So,
I'm going to give you a complete list because it's mind boggling. It really is. Watch,
yeah,
out for Robert Berry with Panchito and Lefty's coming up.
I know. Any day now, Robert, you keep promising me. What's up with that? Well, if people want to learn.
I eat well around town.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. If people want to learn more about Chef Lee's really great cookbook, Snob, you can go to thesouthernfork.com. We'll have links of where to purchase, also an image of him, and an image of the restaurant. And then if you like what you hear, or you want to share it on social media, or any of the 15 or 20 people that we shouted out to today want to share it on social media, we'd really appreciate it. But thanks so much for coming.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You've been listening to The Southern Fork. I can't wait to bring you more culinary conversations, but in the meantime, I have one question. Are you going to eat all that?